ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Indigenous players, you see it every week. We can light the game up if clubs can make sure that the spaces are there for them, that they're safe, and they can grow as individuals. They're going to thrive out on the playing field.
That's Michael McLean, the former Brisbane and Footscray player, is the Sir Doug Nicholls Round honoree for this year. And what he's talking about there is an ongoing concern for the AFL. That's the plummeting elite participation numbers of Indigenous footballers. Did you know we're at a two-decade low? Well, McLean has spoken to us about how to potentially address that, as well as some incredible stories from a career that has had pretty astonishing moments on and off the field, ahead of the two rounds, where First Nations footy is at the centre of the conversation. And his message is broadly one of hope. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Michael McLean played 183 games across a career with Footscray. Brisbane, probably even bigger, has been his work in the anti-racism and community development space. He'd certainly say so. Michael, congratulations on being named Sir Doug Nicholls honoree. What was it like to find out you'd been named?
Yeah, no, it feels pretty special. Yeah, a little bit surreal as well. I know, you know, there's way better Indigenous players, past players than me. But when I reflect on my career, I was able to achieve a little bit along the way and, I guess, mix it against most. I'm really proud as well to have been working for the past 30 years in the disengaged youth space, which has been pretty important to me as well.
I want to talk to you more about that in a moment, but take us back to the moment when you found out that you were going to be the Sir Doug Nicholls honoree. How did you find out?
Well, I found out when Dills gave me a call right at the end of the year. Yeah, that was a nice surprise for me. I was pretty shocked, actually, to be fair. But, you know, coupled with the racism stuff, and I guess my achievements, when I think about it, I was okay as a player. So I got a little bit more comfortable with it when I found out that the award's not just for your playing side of it, it's also the impact you've had on the community as well.
I mean, you're very humble to say that you are okay as a player. Nearly 200 games at Brisbane Hall of Famer. You've certainly achieved a fair bit on the park. But you talk about the way you were able to also make a big contribution off it. And central to that was the work you did around what was pivotal from Michael Long in terms of addressing anti-racism and making that push. Can you tell us about your recollections of that time and how difficult that was?
It was a tough time. There was a couple of big moments with Nicky Winmar and then Longie's incident as well. It was the end of it with mediation, and it just so happened that I was catching up with him when Brisbane played Essendon at back then Princes Park, and I had all intentions of catching up to say good day to him and find out how he was actually travelling. And we approached each other and gave each other a hug, and I said, "How are you travelling?" And he said he was struggling a little bit. He needed a hand. You know, he wanted to continue and persevere with trying to make real change. I was more than happy to support him with it. I think back then I sort of came out and threatened to name players and repeat offenders, and, you know, the AFL weren't happy with that and wanted to speak to me. And myself and Tony Peake met on a number of occasions, along with another group of players in Gilbert McAdam and Shea Cockatoo Collins and Longie as well. And we had group meetings, we had individual meetings as well with Tony Peake. And I'm just glad that we came up with the racial vilification code of conduct based on equality, because it was not just the Indigenous players, it was right across the board. All walks of life weren't happy as well. Really proud that I supported Longie, and really proud of Longie that he persisted with it.
I mean, you were such a trailblazer in that space. When you hear about that, I can only imagine how difficult that would have been at that point of time. When you see the way racism is very much still an issue with what we're seeing with players having to cop on social media, as well as from over the fence, is there part of you that feels as though we're still in the same sort of space, or do you feel like big strides have been made?
Well, I think big strides have been made on field, and I'm really proud of that. However, you can't control the off-field stuff. You can just continue as people to educate others, have ethics and morals on being respectful to one another, irrespective of where you're from. That part of it is uncontrollable, and a little bit controllable in terms of individual people trying to educate others.
We know the AFL is eager to grow the level of Indigenous participation. Right now, there's 62 First Nations players in the AFL, and as I understand it, that's a two-decade low. The AFL has been clear. They want to grow that and AFLW numbers.
I've seen the idea of potential list spots being dedicated and funded by the league as a potential initiative.
It may be list spots, it might be different mechanisms, and that's what we've got different working groups looking at those, and we'll continue to do that. But we'll do that making sure that we're consulting with everyone, and again, as I said, just providing the opportunities, and that's the number one thing, because we know the talent's there, we know the hard work's there, just making sure that the opportunity's there.
Do you see that as the logical next step, or what else would you like to see head office doing?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a logical next step. It's a step. It's a step forward for us, and hopefully we'll take those opportunities as Indigenous players and that are being offered to us. I think we owe it at grassroots level to make sure we get our players more ready for if and when they can get to the highest level in terms of basic fundamentals, also the work ethic and the sacrifices you need to make along the way, so that you're way ahead of where you need to be if and when you get to the AFL level. But I'm glad the wheels are in motion.
It was really interesting over the weekend. I'm sure you saw the comments from St Kilda coach Ross Lyon talking about playing in the top end.
Probably the opportunity for the AFL is play 9 games there. Every team come and play a game here. Imagine the Darwin with 9 games for the year. Why give it to one club and 2 games? Like, sure, they get government support. Everyone do some heavy lifting for the territory. They produce great players. I think we talk about expansion. Why not just everyone just share the 9 games, which is like that?
What do you think about the ways that we can continue to, I guess, highlight and elevate the game in the Northern Territory?
Well, if that's possible, more games would be great. You know, it's a little bit like if you can see it, you can believe it. 1,000 years ago, in 1977. Geelong and Hawthorn came to Darwin and took us for a coaching clinic. Michael Turner from Geelong and Kelvin Matthews from Hawthorn. And I still to this day remembered the 3 Ds, discipline, dedication, desire. And they rang in my ears. And to be able to see those players in up close and personal, that made a massive impact on me. And then I started to realize a dream. I fast forward from 12 through to 18, and I actually played against Geelong, and I could not wait to get across the other side of the ground to see Michael Turner and just to say to him, you inspired me.
That's an incredible story. And what also I'm drawn to there is the pathway that you must have had to walk in order just to reach what was your ultimate goal. When you look at the current pathways for emerging talent and you think about your own path there, how do you compare and contrast the two?
National carnivals I used to be involved with. Under 15s and under 17s level. So we would play the 6 or 7 games at national level against all states. And I think now from the Territorians' point of view, we play 3 or 4 games. And I know we're getting a few more games afforded to us over the next few years. And if that can happen, that'd be great. More games are better. At a higher level for our local kids is obviously a better thing for us as far as their growth and development goes. But most definitely grassroots level academies, 10 to 15 years of age. I'm not sure which age you should start at, but definitely something's in motion at the moment where we can work on the basic fundamentals and get the kids ready earlier to form those good habits that you need.
There's an AFL subcommittee implemented to try and address the participation piece at the elite level, Michael. You know, greats of the game like Sean Burgoyne, Michael O'Loughlin, Michael Walters, they've been critical of the fact that it's a 16-person panel, only 3 First Nations reps. Does that worry you when you hear greats of the game concerned by the makeup of those boards that are going to be, or those committees that are going to be part of trying to address one of the challenges?
I think as long as we've got representation there, that's going to be heard. And if that's the case, that's great. I don't think there's a cap number that you should have on there, but you should have representation that needs to be heard. And if that's the case, that's great. We've got so many great past players that could be on that advisory board. But I'm just glad things are happening and we're having the conversation about it, because we need to grow those numbers back, because Indigenous players, you see it every week. We can light the game up.
Jenkins Tried to burst through. Eddie Betts. Not his pocket.
Stop it.
That no way. Not from there. Oh, feeds a frenzy, Eddie. Sorry. You're not entitled to kick that one. You cannot, I don't care who you are. You're not entitled to kick that.
You're not allowed to kick left foot tall.
A left foot barrel from the boundary.
In the way.
If clubs can make sure that the spaces are there for them, that they're safe, and they can grow as individuals, they're going to, you know, thrive out on the playing field.
I mentioned before the idea of having dedicated list spots, and you said it's maybe not the only step, but it is a positive step. What else would you like to see?
Well, I just think it's a whole gamut of things. I think local level, you've got to get your local, I suppose, breeding ground right, so the kids have got a fair playing field, you know, along their junior journey. And then make sure at club level, and then we go into the high performance space with the young kids, making sure that's right and the framework's right there, and you've got the right people in the right spots, making sure the inspiration's there for the players to still keep believing. And then at club level, make sure that, one, you want the players there and you need the players there and you can cater for the players' needs along the way. I think if you get all those things right, you will definitely grow the numbers, and it's a good thing for our people.
It was so cool today to see the various jumpers on display and some of the absolute stars of the competition modelling them. And it makes me think we've got 2 weeks of, you know, a tremendous showcase of Indigenous footy. What are you most looking forward to, Michael?
Well, I look forward to the couple of weeks to watch all the lads run around for their respective teams, but I was, you know, certainly in awe of it, envious, wish I was playing, never got the opportunity. I think it's been going for about 12 years now. Yeah, they're pretty fortunate, the lads, to be able to talk about who they are and where they come from and celebrate their mob to the public, and also get the opportunity to run around with the colours, the artwork from their respective communities. So really jealous about it, but I love watching it, and I love watching the lads run around and play really well.
It sounds like a note of like positive jealousy, if there is such a thing, and it's a great...
It is. Yeah. It is positive, but I envy them. I just think, wow, I wish I had that opportunity to be able to do that.
What's your biggest message, I guess, to the current playing cohort? I mean, it must have been incredible to speak to some of these young stars of the game.
It was good. It was great to catch up with them all, understand where you are, where you are, the opportunity you've got, and just keep believing in yourself.
It's a bright, optimistic note to end on. Michael McLean, the Sir Doug Nicholls honoree for 2026. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Headlines. Huge controversy in the Premier League, where Arsenal has claimed all 3 points after the video referee ruled out a goal that would have seen them draw with relegation-threatened West Ham. The goal came in the 95th minute before it was overturned for a foul on the Gunners' goalkeeper that was borderline.
Latest corner, goalkeeper forward for it, through the hands of his opposite number, cleared off the line, but with what? Did it hit an arm?
It's gone in.
It's gone in. What a moment.
Wow.
What a moment!
After review, West Ham number 19 commits a foul on the goalkeeper. Final decision is direct free kick.
It's disallowed. That is a decision that will be talked about for weeks, months and years.
That could simultaneously see Arsenal win the league and West Ham get relegated. Wow. For a good recap on Arsenal season to date, which has been insane. Scroll back in our feed for our conversation on the Gunners. Cricket, where Cricket Australia was pretty eager to sell off part of the BBL. That fell over, and Chief Executive Todd Greenberg has spoken about it all for the first time on the ABC Cricket Pod. Here's a little of his conversation with Corbin Middlemass.
We've got our own unique challenges in the way the game's governed. In saying that, though, that's the hand we're dealt, so we have to do the best we can. It's like trying to land a very big jumbo jet on a very skinny runway.
Corbin asked all the questions, get all the answers on that podcast. Imagine crashing your bike so badly, you fracture your elbow and suffer a concussion, and you consider that to actually be reasonably lucky. That's the reality for Jay Vine after the Australian had a nasty fall in the Giro d'Italia, with his wife, Brie, saying he was lucky given how hectic the tumble was. Vine has previously fractured his skull and vertebrae in a race in 2022 in Spain. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Fox Footy and Stan Sport for the extra audio used in this episode.